Thank you. Thank you, Iowa. Now, we just heard from President Obama, and it reminded me of something that I think we should think about, and that is to reach out to our Republican friends and colleagues who are suffering from a very, very serious illness. They suffer from amnesia. They forgot what the world looked like 7 years ago. They forgot that 800,000 people a month were losing their jobs. They forgot that the world's financial system was on the verge of collapse. And they just forgot that we ran up the largest deficit in the history of the United States in the last year of George Bush. So we wish our Republican friends well on the road to recovery, and we tell them what every American knows. Yeah, we got problems today, but everybody knows, thanks to the president and the vice president, we have made real progress in improving our economy. And we have done that despite unprecedented obstructionism from right-wing Republicans. Now, let me begin by thanking all of you for being here tonight. Thank Dr. McGuire for her great work as chair of the Iowa Democratic Party. And I want to thank you for your patriotism, for your love of our country, and for doing today what too few Americans are doing. You are not standing on the sidelines complaining. You are not turning your backs on the political process. You are standing up and fighting back. And that is what this campaign is about. And it is what the political revolution is about. When you see the middle class of this country disappearing, and when you see people you know working two or three jobs trying to cobble together some income and some health care, you don't just shrug your shoulders and say that's the way it is. You fight to raise the minimum wage to a living wage. $15 an hour. And we fight for pay equity for women workers. When millions of Americans today do not have jobs, you fight for a massive federal jobs program to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure and to put millions of our people back to work. You fight for an economy that works for all Americans and not just the wealthiest people in this country. When you see that the United States has more income and wealth inequality than any other major country on earth, and when you see that almost all of the new income being generated today is going to the top 1%, you know, and the American people know that is not moral, not sustainable, and you demand that the wealthiest people in this country and the largest corporations start paying their fair share of taxes. When you see that here in the United States, we have more people in jail than any other country on earth, disproportionately black and Latino, you know that what we have got to do is invest in jobs and education, not more jails and incarceration. When you saw the United States Supreme Court in one of the worst decisions in the history of our country pass the Citizens United case, which allows the wealthiest people in this country to essentially buy elections and buy candidates, you demanded a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. And I promise you that no nominee of mine to the Supreme Court will be voting to support Citizens United. They will be voting to overturn Citizens United. Now, while many in the Republican Party continue to deny the reality of climate change, you have demanded that we lead the international effort in transforming our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy. And you understand the moral imperative, that we leave this planet in a way that is healthy and habitable for our children and our grandchildren. You are not on the sidelines of these struggles. You are in the middle of this fight, and that is what our campaign is all about. Six months ago, when I began my campaign for President of the United States of America, and when we announced that we were going to take on the political and economic establishment of this country, very few people knew who I was. That's the fact. I may have a big ego, but that's the fact. We were at about 3% in the polls. We had no money. We had no political organization. Well, in the last 6 months, things have changed. Yes, they have. Hundreds of thousands of volunteers in every state in this country are working hard, including 7,000 right here in Iowa. We have brought out to our rallies and our town meetings over 300,000 Americans. And we've drawn some of the largest turnouts of any campaign. And today I can tell you, and I'm very proud of this, that we have raised more individual contributions than any candidate in the history of our country at this point in a campaign. And the average contribution is $30 apiece. Now, the pundits, the great political experts, they've said that in this day and age, you cannot win a campaign unless you have a super PAC, unless you go to the millionaires and the billionaires and you beg for money. Well, I'm the only Democratic candidate for president who does not have a super PAC. And we are going to prove the experts wrong because we're going to win this campaign. And by the way, just to remember, about 8 years ago, all of the political experts talked about how another Democratic candidate for president just couldn't win. He was unelectable. You remember that guy? What's his name? Oh, it's President Obama. Well, Iowa, I think we are going to prove the pundits wrong again. I believe we're going to make history one more time. Now, I know that my political life is not as well known as some other candidates. So let me just take a brief moment in the remaining time that I have to talk to you about some of the difficult choices, decisions that I have had to make, some of the forks in the road that I have encountered in my career as mayor of Burlington, Vermont, as a U.S. congressman, and as a United States senator. When I was elected mayor of the largest city in my state by 10 votes, I think it's fair to say that it was a shock to the establishment. Nobody thought we could win that election, and I was opposed by the entire political establishment. That's the way it was. I faced a fork in the road, either capitulate to the special interest in my city and the political establishment, or we stand up and fight back, and that is what we did. Two years later, in the next election, we doubled the voter turnout. We elected progressive candidates, and we made profound changes to make Burlington one of the most livable cities in the United States of America. And I learned the lesson then And the lesson is, if you stand with the people, if you're prepared to take on big money interest, you know what? Ordinary people will get involved in the political process. They will come out and vote. And that's a lesson we have got to learn today. Republicans win when voter turnout is low. We win when people come out and voter turnout is high. Now, after I came to Congress, elected in 1990, corporate America, Wall Street, the administration, and virtually all of the corporate media, they said, you got to vote for this NAFTA trade agreement. It's wonderful. It's great. I didn't believe their arguments. I voted against NAFTA. I voted against CAFTA. I voted against PNTR with China. And history has proven those of us who opposed those agreements were right. Because in the last 14 years, this country has lost 60,000 factories and millions of decent paying jobs. And let me be clear about the current trade deal that we are debating in Congress, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That agreement is not now, nor has it ever been, the gold standard of trade agreements. I did not support it yesterday. I do not support it today, and I will not support it tomorrow. In 1996, I faced another fork in the road, a very, very difficult political situation. It was called the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA. Brought forth by a Republican-led Congress, and its purpose was clear: to discriminate against gays and lesbians into the law. And let us all remember that gay and lesbian rights were not popular then as they are today. It was a tough vote. And I'm sorry to have to tell you that that bill won by an overwhelming majority in the House of 342 to 57. That was not a political easy vote. Now today, some are trying to rewrite history by saying they voted for one anti-gay law to stop something worse. That's not the case. There was a small minority in the House opposed to discriminating against our gay brothers and sisters, and I am proud that I was one of those members. Climate change is real. Climate change is caused by human activity, and climate change is already causing devastating damage in America and all over the world. It is a very sad moment in American history when almost all Republicans running for president reject science and the need for bold action to combat climate change. Sadly, these Republicans prefer to take super PAC contributions from the Koch brothers and the fossil fuel industry rather than to protect the planet for our kids and our grandchildren. And if you agree with me about the urgent need to address climate change, then you know immediately what to do about the Keystone Pipeline. This was not a complicated issue. Should we support the construction of a pipeline across America, accelerating the extraction and transportation of some of the dirtiest fossil fuel in the world? To me, that was a no-brainer, and that's why I have opposed the Keystone Pipeline from day one. Let me now take you back to a very eventful year and a decision in the modern history of our country. The year is 2002. The issue is whether Congress should vote to invade Iraq. Public opinion and most of the media were for the war. And it turns out that big majorities in Congress were for the war as well. Overwhelming support in the House and the Senate for the war. I listened carefully to what Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld had to say, and I said, no, they're not telling the truth. And I was right. Brothers and sisters, it gives me no joy to tell you that much of what I predicted about Iraq turned out to be right. Doesn't give me any joy at all. But that was a tough vote. I came to that fork in the road, and I took the right road, even though it was not popular at that time. Throughout my career in Congress, I have voted time and time again to rein in Wall Street. If a bank is too big to fail, it's too big to exist. We need to reestablish and bring back Glass-Steagall legislation. And we need to break up these huge banks. Well, let me conclude, because I see Andy getting itchy here. Let me conclude by just saying this. We face, as a nation, enormously difficult and complex problems. That's the truth. But I believe now, and I have always believed from the bottom of my heart, that yes, these guys got the money, they have the power. But when people stand together, black and white, Hispanic, gay and straight, young and old, men and women, gay, when we stand together, there is nothing that we cannot accomplish. And I pledge to you that every day I will fight for the public interest, not the corporate interest. I will not abandon any segment of American society, whether you're gay or black or Latino, poor or working class, just because it is politically expedient at a given time. So let us go forward together, and let us tell the Republicans that their reactionary agenda may work for the billionaires, but not for ordinary Americans, and we are going to defeat them. Thank you all very much.